Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Ian Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
Brian Brushwood.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. No, I'm paying attention. I didn't do it.
You know who was paying attention, gentlemen?
Elon Musk. The answer is always Elon Musk.
No,
damn.
That's going to be...
Snakes. It's usually snakes if it's not Elon Musk.
Goblins. Goblins. Snake goblins riding Elon Musk.
No. No. Not this time.
Who?
So, we've discussed this before on the show, and we may have been talking about some early speculation about this, but remember how, like, Pluto became not a planet because, like, Pluto was like, oh, I'm sorry, Pluto, you're a little too small and you're not that special. We've got a lot of dwarf objects your size or maybe greater, so, you know, doesn't matter. We made billions of kids learn, you know, my mother served us something something pizzas.
Nine pies, yeah.
So Pluto got the boot, right? But then some of the same people who gave Pluto the boot have been like looking at the give him the boot. This is the Canadian Astronomy Channel. They were looking at some star stuff, some astronomy stuff. They're looking
at numbers,
actually at the Oort cloud. The Kuiper Belt. Let me get that right. So they were looking at Oort clouds much further out. So they were looking at things in the Kuiper Belt, which is where a lot of these comets and stuff come from, right? These, if you look at our solar system from the top, you'll see our planets, and then further out, you'll see where comets and stuff swerve in there. And they noticed that some of the Kuiper Belt objects seem to have a distorted, highly elliptical orbital pattern trending towards one area. It's like they're off on the plane being pulled out by something. And they're thinking like, hey, you know what? Maybe there's something out there. Maybe there's some large, massive object pulling on them way the heck out there. I mean, we're talking, you know, like hundreds or thousands of astronomical units, but still technically in our solar system.
So maybe, I'm looking at a chart right now that shows a bunch of elliptical orbits, like what I assume is a disproportionate number of them all kind of leaning off to this random area of space with no real rhyme or reason, apparently.
That is correct. And so the theory is that this could be Planet X.
I have spent my whole life hearing about Planet X. You tell me we're finally going to find Planet X?
Well, you know, there are some scientists said, hey, we found a band in the sky. We found some observations of what's happening with these objects. And, you know, we think perhaps that it could be out there. It would have an extremely slow orbit, something about 10 to 20,000 years to circle the sun. This would be technically this instead of Planet X for Planet 10, it would be Planet 9 because we killed Planet 9. And so there's a slot fresh open.
But this would be a true planet because the reason, you know, it wasn't with extreme prejudice that we destroyed Pluto. It's just that we acknowledged that our definition of planet was mushy and that we needed something. So we redefined it as an object that clears its orbit of all surrounding material that and so on. So. This does apparently have that. What was the mass? Like 20 to 30 Earths or something crazy?
Could be Neptune size.
Wow.
All right. So when did Planet X first come on the radar of, you know, the general public or astronomy at large?
I read about it in 321 Contact magazine in like 1984.
321 Contact is
it's
the moment.
Yep.
Sorry. Just nostalgic little thing. That had an impression on me. Yeah, there's been talk forever and ever since we realized there were things in the sky that there might be something else out there. And some people are like, yeah, you know, such and such culture knew this existed. Like, really? Did they show us where to look in the sky for it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead and picture it didn't happen, Zoroastrians.
Yeah. So anyhow, there's
apologies to all our Zoroastrian listeners.
Yeah. I actually did a Christmas party for the Zoroastrians.
Yeah, did they pay you?
No.
Yeah.
Hmm. Let's stay above the racial humor.
Okay. All right. All right.
No, they actually did. But anyhow, nice group of people. Really nice, the Zoroastrians. So there's a book out called The Hunt for Vulcan, and about the search for a planet X, but looking for it in kind of a the historical context of that. And it's, I'm not sure, like, I guess this might be a little bit premature, because I guess like the 19th century they thought they discovered something along those lines, and then they realized like, no, it's not there. But then maybe, and that kind of became the argument of like, well, yeah, there is no other planet out there, because we this person's theory is wrong. Like, yeah, but there might be further out there, and there are other reasons to think that. So the astronomers who are doing the research on this, they say that like there's only like a 0.15% statistical likelihood that this is a random they say there's only a 0.007% chance, or about 1 in 15,000, the clustering could be a coincidence.
So I'm sorry, what were the odds again?
0.0007% chance that it's that there's just a, that those orbital patterns we're looking at are a coincidence.
So in other words, it's technically possible that it was just, you know, an artifact of the statistics, you know, a statistical anomaly, but that's not very likely given everything that we know and see about standard deviations.
That is correct, sir. So now it's going to become a search to see if we can find any evidence of this planet.
So how does that work? How do you find evidence of a planet that far away?
You're going to try to figure out what band of the sky it would be in. You're going to try to estimate where it would be based upon the orbital perturbations. And other words I have difficulty saying out loud. Mm-hmm. So they're going to – basically the problem is it could have an orbital period of 10,000 years. Could be 20,000 years. So that's a big area to look at. But you know what? We have planet-finding telescopes now, and we have able to see things with precision. So we're going to look for something, either something giving off a faint amount of light, something maybe occluding things in the background, looking for, you know, whatever kind of information we can to see what's out there.
So – what I mean, all right. So aside from having this mysterious planet out there, what could, like, is there any other hunches that we've had on Planet X, or is it just, you know, the truth is out there, QX Files theme?
There's been speculation that as we used to think once upon a time that our solar system was, our Earth was the center, and then when we realized that we accepted a heliocentric solar system, the idea that, well, the planets that we can see with the naked eye are all there are. And then guys like Galileo started looking at, you know, out there, and then you had Newton realizing that, like, listen, there's a whole mathematics to this. Using telescopes, we started to see moons around Jupiter and realize that there are other objects there. And then the idea that there might be unseen things. And that was a radical idea, the idea that there could be big objects out there that we couldn't see, because why would God do that?
Right.
And that became, you know, once we realized, no, there's a lot of things out there we can't see, and the science overwhelmingly convinced us of that, we still have this idea of like, okay, it's these 9 planets and there's an asteroid belt.
Yeah.
And then we're looking out, we see that comets are coming from places, and we're like, well, maybe, you know, there's a place where comets come from. And then we're like, well, maybe there's a place where other objects are from. And so we just keep expanding our idea of what our solar system is to now there's this 9th planet. And I promise you, between here and the next star system, there are other planetary masses probably drifting through space.
We've talked about these dark planets that are just completely in interstellar space, just floating along, possibly, you know, heated by their own, you know, crushing weight of their own mass, with entire living ecosystems deep inside them, like these little seed pods floating through the galaxy, which is amazing that I guess it would make sense that we have one on our doorstep, but it makes me wonder how many. It kind of makes me afraid for interstellar flight. It just seems like you'd run into one of these guys.
I don't think I have the opposite view on that, Brian.
Okay.
One, I mean, you're going
to
know that it's there.
Fly through the stars.
Yeah. I mean, it's when we realized there was an asteroid belt, we're like, oh man, you know, what are the chances of running into the asteroid belt? Well, it's like heading in your car and being afraid you're going to hit Dearborn, Michigan, or, you know,
by driving just any random direction,
Puerto Rico. Yeah, you have to really shoot for it and aim for it. So that's, we don't need to, what the exciting part about this is that as we progress into space, we want resources and we want different platforms in which we can get these things from and to build outwards. And so if we have islands continuing from our solar system onto the next solar system, it means there are all these depots and places people could live and places to get resources.
Oh, that's a really good point. All of a sudden you take a negative and it becomes a pretty huge positive.
Oh, yeah. It's an exciting thing to think that from here to our next star, there might be dozens and dozens of worlds along the way. So it's not like you just hop into a spaceship and you're just, you know, it's you and vacuum from here on out there.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I guess, I mean, is there any like timetable? Do we have a bet, any predictions that we're going to find some kind of information on this before, let's say, the end of the year?
I would not know about that. I would not know at all.
Well, let's recklessly speculate.
I'm going to predict that within 3 years, they will track this to a level that they can predict an occlusion over particular stars and have it confirmed. That's my prediction.
So you think Planet X in the bag?
Yeah, sometime in the next 3 years. But also, you know, I believed that all Marvel movies would be good. So I may be a little bit credulous here.
What this totally unsolicited shot?
I don't know. I was just trying to think of something that that somebody obviously would throw shade at. Although I got to admit, Avengers 2 kind of sucked. I mean, now that there's some distance between me and it, it sucked. It was a crappy movie. Okay, can we say that?
I was just wondering. It wasn't that I was objecting. I was just wondering which movie you wanted.
I was just trying to think of something that I had been suckered, that I used to believe and now I don't believe so much. Sorry.
Brian, you're correct on that. As far as a bet as to what will happen, you know, there's going to be more attention, more eyes on the sky looking for this and trying to narrow down that orbital path. Once you have an idea what that is, then you might have a better idea where to look. So I think with more eyes looking at it, could be interesting. And so, there we've got a graph here courtesy of Bryce showing us the zone of search with the Subaru telescope, which I did not know was a thing.
Spot brought to you by Toyota, ironically enough.
Weird. Yeah.
The official sponsor of the Subaru telescope.
And the all-new hybrid RAV4. Let's go places. Well, I'll tell you what. There's only one place you need to look if you'd like to support this program, and that's patreon.com/weirdthings. Everywhere around the world, they're coming to patreon.com/weirdthings. Just go ahead and toss us a thin little shekel or whatever a monetary prize you would like to donate to the program, and we take it greedily and make sure that we continue to deliver this high quality science and entertainment fantastic review.
Patronize us, please.
Yes. Oh, thanks. Thanks. Being a patronizer. Being a patronizer has never been so fulfilling with patreon.com/weirdthings.
So, gentlemen, speaking of patronizing, speaking of supporting things, speaking of making the impossible possible, Mr. Jeff Bezos.
Oh, there it is. Oh, by the way, I'm so conflicted. I'm so conflicted. Tell the story and I'll say why I'm conflicted.
So Mr. Jeff Bezos, who created a little delivery company called Amazon,
which we do not talk bad about in this house, as we are now deriving our healthcare from the Amazon-owned Twitch company.
Aha.
Which...
But go on. No, please continue carefully to talk about dear leader.
Well, actually, I come here to praise him.
Good. So, yeah. Big week for Bezos and Blue Origin.
So Blue Origin, as we remember, a couple months ago, they launched their new Shepard rocket, which is a single stage to space, not to orbit, but to space, which is still important, which is about 60 miles up, which is what they call the Kármán line, which is this point at which, you know, you kind of have a boundary where we sort of say space is a thing. And it came back, it detached a little capsule with some parachutes that Jin just plopped back down with, into the desert. And then the rocket stage landed upright, which was a significant achievement. They designed their own rocket thruster. They built this thing and it went up. First, you know, single stage rocket to space and back. Again, different, very, very different than what SpaceX is doing, but absolutely very significant. And then what they did a couple days ago is they launched this thing again. They said they replaced the igniters and the parachutes, but otherwise it was the same hardware that, and it went up to the Kármán line and came back down. Very big deal. So what you have, they put out a video talking about what their goal is, and we've mainly me has given them some shade because a lot of their talk is about space tourism and stuff, which, you know, sending rich douches into space is not the most exciting application for me. But they've also said, yes, but we want to go beyond. We want to do orbital. We want to do these other things. In their video, they talk about Jeff Bezos' vision of millions of people living and working in space, which is a goal that they're doing. And so they look at tourism as a part of that step and as a way to get up there and to further on out. And I think that it's an absolutely amazing accomplishment. And I just want to say, yay, Blue Origin.
Yeah, this is the first time that we've seen hardware used for a second time. You know, it's you know, even though we've received word that that the SpaceX, you know, first stage seems like it's able to be used again, nobody's seen it before. But the fact that we're just, you know, like we've talked about before, taking a 737 and taking it on a second trip, this is unprecedented, and this is completely huge.
Blue Origin. Let's also be clear here in terms of expectations, because what SpaceX has done is create a realm in which we are interested in these kinds of companies. We are interested in the incremental progress that they can make because every step is important and historic. But where SpaceX announces their stuff and live streams it, and Elon Musk is posting the most baller vines in history on his personal account.
You're not kidding.
Blue Origin does not have those same expectations. They can launch whatever they want. They could have launched this, and this could have been a failure, and they could have just said boo about it, right? But what they have done is still amazing, still historic. They just are not going to get the same. If SpaceX said, okay, yeah, we've been live streaming all these. We've been telling you when they're going to launch. Obviously, there's an element of necessity that we have to our public-facing communication because we are launching from a big public, you know, we're working with NASA. So we have to let people know to a certain extent it's going to be a news event, so we might as well control it. Blue Origin doesn't have that. You know, and they are able to do it, and I think it's because SpaceX has led the way that they are able to get away with making really rad, amazing YouTube videos that don't have a tremendous amount of consequence to them. Like, there's no, if they fail, they don't have to say that they failed.
Yeah, they blew up some stuff testing phase, and let's clarify here because I see some comments in the chat room and the chattering classes are speaking. So yeah. What the first was for Blue Origin was the first single stage to space, that Kármán line, as I say, quote, where space is a thing, which I'll get into a little bit later of just how messy of a definition that can be. What it happened, the precedent for that was, now people point out, what about the space shuttle? Well, the space shuttle gate spit off its solid rocket boosters. Those things fell into the ocean and had to be massively refurbished to be used again. That big, huge orange tank just dumped and burned into the atmosphere after that thing was jettisoned. The engines had to be completely rebuilt on the orbiter. Fun fact, when the space shuttle was up in space, flying around the atmosphere, up there, there was enough atmosphere there that you know, they had to use those boosters to bring the ISS, but that's a point for later. But they had enough problem with meteor impacts or space debris that they twice brought the space shuttle back down with a cracked windshields. So they started flying the space shuttle backwards with the boosters first, so anything that hit would just run into those engines because they were going to rebuild those things anyways.
Wow.
So it was parts of it were repurposed, but it was not a reusable. The first reusable, like, you could argue that, like, you know, the X-planes that, like, Chuck Yeager flew, which went to the edge of space, would arguably have been reusable. Or the first clear, like, reusable was, obviously reusable, was Spaceship One, which Scaled Composites did to win the X Prize, where they had an airplane bring up the rocket, and then the rocket dropped off, then flew up into space, went in clearly into space, and then it landed vertically. Now, what was cool about that was that that was a reusable system. Now, it used a solid rocket motor, which is basically like nitrous oxide and tires, so it was, they just pulled that whole engine thing out. Where what SpaceX and what Blue Origin are trying to do is build these engines where you just pump them full of fuel. So you can see just the exhaust on this thing. It's just this black, nasty sort of stuff coming out of there.
That's
amazing. Not that different than what you use with your little model rockets.
So hold on. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that Burt Rutan's Spaceship One landed vertically? I could have
horizontally. Pardon me. I
oh, okay. Spoke. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was.
It landed once vertically, and that was not good.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Too soon.
So.
Oh, jeez.
You know where? I guess like where are we? I mean. I guess we kind of do this since this very often becomes talking about, you know.
Oh, wait, somebody has pointed out the DCX. That was a McDonnell Douglas, I think, project. A number of the engineers who worked on the DCX actually work for Blue Origin now. So that was the continuation of that one, Delta Clipper. So I apologize.
I guess, is there some kind of line where we can fundamentally say, like, okay, reusability means under this amount of either percentage or dollars that you spend to put it back up, right? Like on the thing itself. Like if you have to totally tear it apart and then put it back together again at a tremendous cost, then reusability obviously doesn't mean much, right? If it just comes down and you can put more, you know, go juice in it and then it goes back up, then that is obviously a fundamentally different meaning.
You know, ultimately it comes down to economics. You know, It comes down to what does it cost to send this thing up or down? You know, I think that's going to be the thing that's the deciding factor, is that you could have, you know, with the shuttle, which was on paper was going to be this reusable craft, but they would call it reusable. But when you're taking the thing completely apart and rebuilding it every time,
it was more politically reusable than anything else.
Yeah. It started off as, hey, let's build a reusable space plane, we could have this one system to get it up. But then part of the problem was, is like, you can't have real reusability with big giant solid rocket boosters. I'm sorry, those things just aren't really reusable. You can they're reusable like a Coke can is, I guess, but. I don't know.
In that they could be melted down and then built into a brand new solid rocket booster later.
It's just not the same. And so once they went from that to a liquid design or liquid booster, or once we gave up using liquid boosters to solid rockets, a number of other compromises, it just wasn't going to be what we wanted. The Soviet Buran was going to use liquid rocket boosters. And the Soviets, of course, you know, were limited very severely by their budget. An exciting thing that happened this week was as far as NASA gave a crew contract, that is to fly, a cargo contract to Sierra Nevada. And they're the ones building a delta wing craft that gets launched on top of a rocket, docks with the International Space Station, then glides back to the launch pad or the landing pad. So that's pretty cool. And that was I had a little back and forth with one of a space columnist. He's like, yeah, whose headline was, you know, this started life as a Soviet design, which is just not true. It started life as delta wing reusable or landing air, you know, spacecraft designs that NASA was working on. And the Soviets were working on stuff, too. And we certainly were influenced by some of their designs. But there was a clear program before then for that, which it was just sensationalism, just drove me nuts.
You want us to go TP our house?
What do you want to do? Find the guy, get him?
I think we should. Right. I think two of my favorite aeronautics or people covering space right now is, I think, Lauren Grush, who's doing it for Verge. She's doing some really good commentary on that. And then Emily Calendarly, who we had when we did the our NASA social coverage, she was one of the people who popped on our video cast at the launch.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, the Space Gal. She's doing it for. She's just knocking out of the park for TechCrunch. So, the Space Gal on Twitter, follow her. Say hey, Andrew Main and Justin and Brian told me to follow you because we hear you're doing great stuff.
I wonder why she changed the name of her Twitter thing. I thought MCal Space Gal was pretty good, but now she's just the Space Gal. I guess maybe it was too crowded a space of gals who were all about space, and so she's like, I'm going to be the Space Gal. Not just MCal Space Gal.
Move along, ladies. Yeah. I'm staking out this corner.
Don't look at me.
She's, without even having had, even if I hadn't met her and seen how bright she was, I would have just been suitably impressed with her coverage. She's one of these people that, like, sometimes I read stuff, I'm like, but she doesn't have that. She's way ahead of me.
Man. So and what a great era on that one.
Where both of the leading columnists on space in the modern era are on Twitter. Just great.
So
goblins, who's got goblin fever?
Snake goblins riding Elon Musk is the search here yielding very weird results.
I would expect no less. Do you want to stick on the space theme, or you want to check out some other stuff?
I got something that's not quite space thing, but
let's get into it.
Yeah. And also, somebody in the chat room wanted to know when we're going to start talking about iCosmos. They're too busy trying to figure out how to copy everybody else's IP right now.
More like, I copy your IP.
What is iCosmos? I don't even know anything.
iCosmos, in my new book, Station Breaker, is a... It's my kind of knockoff SpaceX company that I have.
I thought it was a real company, this calculator. There's a calculator called iCosmos.
That's where it started, apparently. I wanted to create this sort of SpaceX Blue Origin-like company because I wanted to have things happen to it that I don't want to disparage like an actual company. So I kind of created this company. I called it iCosmos. And so it's a big, important plot point for the Station Breaker book going forward. And so I sent out sample copies to people, and I'm already having people call out.
I don't want to spoil nothing, but I don't think iCosmos will be making YouTube videos based on the crazy stuff that happens on their missions, man.
Yes. So, hey guys, Do you want to see some cool stuff in the Siberian tundra?
A little bit.
Yeah. Hey,
the closest thing to true fantasy settings left on this planet in my mind, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but like Siberia is one, the middle of like the Kalahari Desert, maybe the Gobi Desert, maybe Antarctica.
You're getting ahead of me, Brian. How about some stuff near the Washington-Oregon border? You know, some stuff.
Dude, that is like the surface of Mars. If you ever have any reason to get from Oregon to Boise, I highly recommend you drive. Because
how about the Sasso Halambavado oil refinery in Hungary? You want to see that?
I love it. Let's go.
That's my favorite place. I'm like, man, when can we get to the Assabalabajababa refinery?
Maybe the Faroe Islands in Denmark. Want to take a look at that? How about Volkel Air Force Base in the Netherlands? When do you want to look at that?
I want it all.
Maybe the Michael Off building in Utah. Want to take a look at that?
No. Now we broke with combo breaker.
too far.
Baker Lake, Canada. How about that?
Back on the horse. Yeah.
Hey, you know what?
Because
Google image search won't let you. Google Earth has blocked those places out and says, no, you cannot see what's going on there.
Well, did they cave to like pressure from governments or something?
Brian, I don't know. I'm waiting for the smoking man to pull me into an alley and tell me.
Oh my God. Yeah. We're sitting here. We're looking at Google Earth right now. For some reason, Baker Lake is it looks like we're zooming in. It looks like we're seeing stuff.
Let me see where it is in Baker Lake.
Is it the fact
there are large whited out spots?
There sure are. That's like a that's the crudest Photoshop job I've ever seen.
No, it's like God's chopping.
Or is that snow? Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Could
here.
Be snow.
It. Where's the rest of it then?
Could be a weird mustache.
Actually, what Baker Lake, Canada? There is a look for a large black band.
Okay, there we go. So we're on the hunt right now.
Yeah,
so
I think that was actually literally snow. That we
is there
saw.
Is there any speculation?
God's on, cruel Photoshop.
Is there any speculation on why this would be blocked out?
I could tell you, Brian. But well, so Baker Lake is. I don't know if there's really much of a. It is no official explanation. Some of these other places are just because there's like satellite. I mean, because there's like, you know, military bases. Sometimes there's some sort of like, hey, we're worried about, you know, some sort of like this. I wonder if this got fixed. I wonder the Baker Lake area, because like I don't see that area.
We,
do, now,
but we have another a map. Screenshot of it here from a a list of places that are.
Oh, is this the.
Out.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that looks like it's just sort of a combination between like we're two different. Areas got matched up, but I would say that the more interesting one is if you can go to, let's take a look at Volkel Air Base in the Netherlands, V-O-L-K-E-L Air Base.
Oh, you know what? We have it. It's also on this list where it's been mosaiced out.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Finally, Van Gogh has his revenge.
Yeah, no, it's got the mosaic pixelation on there, like one of the default Photoshop filters, it looks like.
So obviously Google is beholden to the nations in which it operates, but I would wonder, is that globally? Is it you know, because if the Netherlands says, hey, man, we got some real important stuff here at this airbase, you need to make sure that Google.Netherlands does not show anything really crazy there. Then, like, that doesn't necessarily extend to google.com, right? Or google.ca. So I would wonder, I mean, if it is governmental, then it shouldn't necessarily be a global Google thing, right?
Well, I think that because Google is everywhere, I think that they probably have some sort of agreement to, if you say, hey, could you not put this up there because we kind of don't want anybody knowing. But it's funny because it's interesting little recent history of satellite data or satellite photography.
Yeah.
The United States had the leading edge for years. We are 20 to 30 years ahead of everybody as far as the resolution of our satellites, our capabilities of doing that. But it was all military. There was laws in place that said that the companies providing military satellite technology could not make this available publicly. So the French and the Russians stepped in and said, hey, yeah, we'll do that. And so we were losing a lot of business to French and Russian companies because they were able to provide much higher resolution than you could get available commercially. And then that, you know, the laws and the restrictions were changed. But along the way, you know, agreements have been made to, like, we need to keep certain things secret or whatever. And it's like, if you say, hey, don't tell anybody this, but these things you can't see here, I guarantee you can buy them from the Russians, you know, you can buy them from the French, or somebody will sell you, you know, these images. So it's kind of,
yeah,
it's interesting. I know that a theme park, of which I will not name, that its satellite data has been, its satellite images there, or a lot of this is also taken from airplanes too. That's one of the things we kind of, a lot of the closer to the ground stuff is taken from airplanes, not from satellites. We call it all satellites, but often most of the higher resolution stuff is airplane stuff. But some of that stuff has been photoshopped of a major theme park because they don't want you to know how close certain parts of it are to roads and how easy it might be to hop a fence and go in there and steal a couple blankety blanks.
Here's an interesting wrinkle. So there is a list here that I've pulled some of these screenshots of censored locations on Google Maps, and so one of them that you mentioned is the Faroe Islands, which is just completely grayed out. But when I go there, I can pull up pretty good imagery of what seems to be the whole island, unless and this is not necessarily the first one where this spot over here is pretty censored, or blurry at least. But I wonder.
But even then, you almost got to wonder how much of that is
real.
Well, I mean, like just
Photoshop. Yeah. Are you saying that it's populated with falsified information?
No, I'm saying that no. They actually legitimately will put Photoshopped places. Sometimes people say, "Hey, use this instead." That's, like I said, a certain theme park does that. It looks like you're looking at it, but that ain't what it is on the ground.
Man.
It is kind of patchworked compared to other imagery.
Mm-hmm. Man.
But that's in part because it's not as easy like with airplane overflights, et cetera, and all that. So, but anyhow, everything's a lie, folks. Everything's a lie.
Speaking of that, apparently the first X-Files revival episode is bad. So just public service announcement.
Oh, that's a bummer.
So there we go. The truth is out there. It just might not be tonight at 8 o'clock.
Is it bad or just underwhelming?
It's like latter seasons. Chris Carter doesn't know how to, at some point,
just off the rails.
Chris Carter lost his magic ring that allowed him to write good X-Files episodes. But then the other ones are apparently pretty good. And there's one, I guess episode 3, which is more of a comedy episode, is really, really great.
Sweet. One more little note. Apparently, on an island called Sulawesi, which is neighbors, the same area where they found the fossils of the little Indonesian hobbit people, the Flores Island, where they found these fossils of what looked like little wee people that may have been their own offshoot hominid. They found some 117,000-year-old fossils near there, which implies that that was a hotbed of just people and stuff around there, predating, modern people. So world's getting more crowded back in the past. That's all. That's all I can say.
Good to know, man.
Yeah. And goblins. Yeah. Dimension goblins. Got a goblin story.
Oh, do we?
Coming out of, so I can't pronounce the name. But it's some township somewhere where there was a goblin sighting, and people said the goblin slept with their wife.
Feel like we've heard this story before.
You could just go to Andrew's screen and watch him type into Google "goblin attack sleeps with wife."
we could simulate it. What might it look like, Bryce?
Maybe something like this.
Max Hastings on the thieves who stole his wife's house. I don't see the word goblin.
Yeah, it's weird that a lot of these are. Google has actually taken the word goblin censored and replaced it as used wife as a
way. Argentinian woman claims to have filmed a goblin. Oh, we already covered that one, right?
I got a new goblin story for you.
Yes!
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 So, I can't even make sense of this.
Nice. Just give it to us raw. We don't need a mollycoddling when it comes to goblins.
Okay, why pop? Here's the headline. Make sense of this. This is like the Zim Daily, which I guess is the Zimbabwe Daily. Headline: why Papa's goblins only speak English?
Why Papa's goblins?
Now I assume Papa's is the name of the region, not your. They're not saying these aren't your dad's goblins.
These are goblins for a new generation. Extreme goblins.
First paragraph. I marveled when Ogawe went down south, and alas, all the demons there were either speaking in Shona or English. No Vinda, no Xhosa, no Swazi, nothing. Only the language the prophet is comfortable with and can speak. When I penned my last article debunking Magawe's 600,000 myth, I was being all technical and mathematical, delving in figures and trying to fit over 500,000 people into space less than 1 square kilometer. So I have...
Now that's authentic frontier gibberish.
I'm reading this here, and I'm
starting to think, I don't know, they can't believe... I mean, is goblin just a cultural word that we're not getting correctly?
I've told this before. Yeah, no, we've covered this, Brian. It was a mistranslation of spirit.
But I don't know that that helps. I mean, I'm starting to think that even a spirit is a supernatural thing, is what I'm saying. I'm wondering, because there's so
how
much...
How can those people believe in the supernatural, Brian? Unlike us here in America...
Anybody think they saw a leprechaun? Say yeah.
I. Okay.
All right. As we head into this campaign season, you're going to see the leaders of our, the prospective leaders of our country from across the political spectrum suggest that they are in touch with the supernatural.
Yes.
We have a, we have some very devoutly Christian people on one, both sides, and then we include, including one presidential candidate who said that they channeled the spirits of other people.
I mean, okay, all right. Maybe they do believe it's supernatural, but I gotta feel like there's some kind of middle ground meaning for the word that is something not supernatural that 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 it's intended
like,
that way.
Like, but, like butthead?
Like well, or just like, yeah, like you know, goblin. Like, you know, I don't know, like if I were to say Justin Robert Young is a Sasquatch, you know, it's like, yeah, that doesn't mean I think he's an, you know, ape man that can't be caught.
Quote, no. I have seen very violent goblin spirits manifest causing serious damage to property and untold injuries to many people, and to think that people believe that all those PPBs gracing the continent are actually dealing with the real think is a laugh. I have no idea. This paragraph starts off with Satanism and Illuminati stuff is a totally different ballgame, and if a single member of these evil groups would visit one of these PPP, we would all witness total disaster in these churches, and they would never ever want to pretend to be exorcising demons again.
Dude, cut my life into pieces. Papa Goblin's our last resort.
Yeah, Papa Goblin's always with them.
Well, there we go.
Do we have a singular, do we have a single listener out in Africa at all? I would love to get
all right,
some
we
kind
need,
of.
We're putting the word out. There's got to be one. If you are listening to this in the mother continent of Africa, then we need you. Where are we emailing? Where's the best place to email, Neshcom?
You can email me, neshcom@gmail, neshcom@gmail.com.
Neshcom@gmail. We need an on the ground correspondent, because every once in a while we're going to get articles like this. We just need to just get some of the lay of the land where you might, because there's a lot of words in there that I assume are dialects or languages or cities that you can't necessarily tell beyond the colloquial meaning. So let's go ahead and look at that.
Oh my goodness. Holy cow.
There's somebody watching right now.
Okay, first of all, can we give a huge shout out to Sergeant Muffin, who's putting the heavy lifting
behind. What is this witchcraft?
DiamondClub.tv. He's got an overlay. We're looking at a map of the entire United States showing where
the
all the
world.
Current I'm sorry, the entire
oh my
world.
God.
Yeah.
Guys, it's the Libyans.
Is it in Libya?
I don't know. Mech said it, so I just figured.
Oh, this is amazing. We're looking at a map of the world of everybody watching live, and that we are truly global. We got people in, is that New Zealand? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah, and then we got Africa. We got Australia. We got somebody in Brazil. We've got
a lot of UK listeners.
Man, how wonderful. Somebody in Saudi Arabia?
Wait, nobody in Russia. Quick, let's make fun of them.
Dude, big in Florida, too.
That's amazing. This is amazing.
Apparently we have somebody in Switzerland, but they're not on the map. If you would pick a side once in a while, we'd actually just...
I mean, they've never had a problem picking sides behind the scenes, Justin.
Oh.
I know, yeah, sitting on that gold. You know where it's from.
All right. Throwing shade at Switzerland.
This is my new character, where I go really hard at Switzerland.
I mean, because what are they going to do? Am I right?
I know. What are they? Oh yeah. Hey, tell your army to knife me.
Yeah, they're done playing with the Pope.
Hey, as we segue into picks, can we talk about an emerging technology? I don't know if you've heard of it, but I think it's going to be a pretty big deal. Do you realize that nowadays it's possible for you to slip on a pair of special goggles and suddenly you find yourself in a different time or place, completely surrounded? They say 360 degrees, but that doesn't count the other 360 degrees, because you're completely surrounded in all sides by the majesty and beauty of, for example, I'll just pick one out of the air, you know, areas outside of Austin, Texas. There's a lot of rad places to visit.
All right. Shut up for a second here, okay?
What?
Do we even have the possibility to show me, like, a couple buffoons, like, barefoot water skiing? Has that even happened yet?
I mean, it would take a bold institution to show, oh, my God, we're looking
at
Brian and
Justin.
Wait,
what am I looking at here?
You're looking at Brian and Justin on the top of Mount Bonnell in a live 3D.
Whoa, you're just tilting the camera to the side, right?
Yeah, 360-degree video. If you have any kind of a Google Cardboard, or I believe there's got to be some version of this that you could do with an Oculus and so on. But we went on 10 adventures around Austin, Texas, and they were super, super rad. You can experience them in a bunch of different ways. If you want to watch them on your desktop, you could just kind of pan left and right, which is okay. I'm a much bigger fan if you have Google Cardboard.
Ah, they're moving, I'm afraid. It's like the train pulling into the station.
if you have Google Cardboard, you could just put your cell phone in there and you could look all around as we do stuff. Right now we're looking at barefoot water skiing.
And understand, folks, when you do it, it's not like distorted like this. This is just taking the photosphere and distorting it to fit in a two-dimensional plane. It looks totally like you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get the full experience. This is a barefoot water skiing, which is probably my favorite. I think
water sports.
So, the other thing is, even if you don't have Google Cardboard, you could download the Discovery VR app to your phone. And then all you have to do, you just kind of look left and right. And it's like you're looking through a magic window. It tracks your with the accelerometer, whether you're panning up, down, your pitch, yaw, roll. And it's able to show you the world as if you're looking through a magic window to this particular time and place.
Brian's a professional at barefoot waters. He's going to high five me. Like, has skis on. Like, he's look at this. And then on his butt, God. he's doing tricks.
They actually edited out some of the tricks. They cut to this other thing to make it look like I gave up, like right there.
Dog on a carpet after it gets wet.
To my knowledge, took about... Brian was out there for a solid hour and 45 minutes.
So, for the record, this is what's great. Discovery is doing the essentially, it looks like the same playbook that they played in the early days of high definition video. In the early days, you got an HDTV. All you wanted is something to show off the HD-ness of it. So you had Discovery HD that would do things like sunrise Earth.
just ate it.
It's pretty great.
And he took part of the camera boon with him too.
It's
that
pretty
was
great.
I did. Oh my God. And that's our producer, our director, just delighting in my getting wrecked in a major way.
It's pretty great when you look at it on the app because you can just back it up and watch it over and over again.
No, it's pretty amazing.
But my point is Discovery is doing the same thing that they did in the HD days. The Discovery VR is a fantastic showcase of Google Cardboard, of just using your cell phone to watch 360-degree videos in virtual space. And they did 10 of these adventures with Justin and I. They're going to be coming out over the next few weeks. We are so unbelievably proud of them because most of the content up until now has been fairly dry stuff, like here's a skateboard going down a mountain or whatever. But
it's been very experiential with their shows. So it's like, I know their gold digging show, they just show you, and if you're a fan of the show, it's really rad because you can see their whole system. They did a bunch with the Mythbusters that are, again, very much putting you kind of at the center of some of their episodes. This is Survivor Man as well, Puppy Bowl, stuff like that. This is maybe the first stuff that they've done in general where it is episodic. You know, there's a little beginning, middle, and end, and you're hanging with me and Brian to have a good time. We've got a lot of really amazing ones. Again, 7 more coming out. 3 are out now. If you want to support it, then download the app, the Discovery VR app. You don't need no goggles. You can just download it and watch it right there on your phone in 360-degree video. And make sure that you @reply, @DiscoveryVR, let them know that, or Discovery_VR, I believe, let them know that you really, really dig it. And go ahead and leave a comment on wherever you download it, on the Google Play Store or the iTunes App Store, and let them know that you really enjoy this content. That's something that that really, really goes a long way. Also, the one where Brian and I go swim under a waterfall, know that Tom Merritt, your friend and mine from Daily Tech News Show, once laid naked under a blanket at that very same beach. So add that to your
spine. Yeah, man, it's really great, and I'm showing off right now for the video viewers right now what it looks like.
It really is responsive.
The tracking is exceptional.
It only took me a minute before I was like, oh, what's over there? Like, it was actually pretty cool.
Well, and you get trained pretty quick. You know, they for example, in the Cathedral of Junk, somebody was laughing that because they were sitting there looking through this and they immediately noticed the Millennium Falcon. And within 30 seconds, we were all like, what's up with that Millennium Falcon over there? And then they, you know, you whip your head around and are able
to
see it.
It's really great because I love what they did. It's unlike a lot of other VR content that I know is on that app where they used regular television conventions, you know, in terms of cuts and in terms of, you know, like they highlight where the Millennium Falcon is with a graphic, right, which is super rad. And I would love to see that continue to be, you know, where they go with that kind of content. I would also very much enjoy if they continued employing Brian and I. So yeah. Everybody would be very excited about it.
Can I double down? Comment, like, seriously, wherever you download the app, as I said, comment in there, single out you like Justin and Bri. It is ridiculous how much influence those things have when they sit in there to figure out, well, did we spend our budget wisely on what we did? And they're going to pull out, like, well, look at the comments we got on iTunes, or look at the comments on the Discovery VR thing. Look at, people seem to like this.
And again, they're going to say something like, this is a real line from a future meeting. They're going to say, well, out of the 25 comments we got, 7 of them are about Justin and Brian. Clearly, they're a big hit. And so understand, it makes a difference. If you're watching live, take a moment right now. Go ahead and do that.
Yeah. And enjoy it. I mean, so we got a ton of stuff coming up. They told us now that they're coming out, we can't talk about it. You know, but I think topic wise, we've got some super fun adventures, and man, there's I don't know whether or not they're going to keep it in, but you might see me get manhandled at a roller disco.
Oh, that was a great moment. By the way, today I went to one of the locations of the place where they create the things. We went and we took the kids so they could watch the things get created.
My personal favorite is where you guys go to the place and get attacked by the flying mammals, of which I won't name.
Okay, good. Keep it quiet. Keep it quiet.
Yeah, yeah, keep it clean.
Quick rabies shots are an amazing medical achievement.
But yeah, no. So big shout out. I'm sure we'll talk about it as we continue to move on and they get released. But you know, it's just an absolute pleasure to work with the whole team at Discovery VR. They are great, and shooting that stuff is unlike. You know, I've been on set for both of your guys' television shows and on other sets in the past. It's unlike anything that I've ever seen. It was such a rad kind of run and gun shoot where, you know, a lot of, like, you'll see in the waterfall episode, you'll see there's, like, basically, like, we're walking along with the camera. It was just a gigantic weighted selfie stick that I was holding, you know, as we were, like, walking along, which is just such a fun idea, right? Like, it was just like shooting the most rad home movies ever.
Yeah, well, and it's fascinating because, you know, I've done stuff for the internet, I've done stuff for television. This is so different from all of it in that it relies on a different set of skills where we have to be our own cameramen, our own director on the fly, our own editors of our own script writers, because every time it's got to feel genuine. Otherwise, it feels too hokey and scripted. And my favorite part is, of course, every time we would start another cut, everybody would hide behind rocks and trees because they didn't want to be caught on cameras just gawking.
I think Andrew was freaking out because of the puppy bull footage.
I was waiting for you guys to show up there.
No, we're not in puppy bull.
Look at him.
I know the guy that created that.
Oh, really? That's amazing. He's done a very great thing.
Our team shot this.
Oh, sweet.
The team that we work with.
Oh, wow. Very cool. You guys ready for some picks?
Heck yes.
Pick it good.
I'll jump right in with a pick.
All right.
Yeah.
Remember on a prior episode, I pointed out a pick based on a suggestion by Brian Brushwood, which was the Jeff Wayne War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Prog rock opera, which, and then we talked about how awesome War of the Worlds is as a story and that, and then I went away thinking like, I think I read that as a kid and probably one of those illustrated classics or something. Like, I don't remember reading the book as an adult. So I'm like, you know what? Let me go see what's on Audible. Let me go dig through Audible and see what I can find. And I found that there were multiple versions of War of the Worlds, and I was trying to decide on one, but then I saw one that said, hey, buy the Kindle book, get this Audible audiobook for 99¢. And sometimes, you know, you get some good deals. You find out the Kindle book is actually kind of not that expensive, and it's sometimes cheaper than using a credit. So I'm like, all right, let me go through. So I click through to Amazon. On the link, they say buy the book, and it's like, oh, yeah, no, this is free with Kindle Unlimited. You know, this is free with whatever. I'm like, huh. So I just got the book for free on Amazon, went back to Audible, and for 99¢, I got, like, the 5-hour War of the Worlds audiobook.
Nice. I assume it's abridged at that duration?
No, Brian.
The whole thing for 5 hours? That's amazing. I didn't realize it was such a short book.
Most of Wells' stuff was that. Yeah, no, that's the whole thing.
Dude, that's awesome.
So, that's my little pick, is if you take a look through Audible and you look for War of the Worlds and you see buy this, you know, the Kindle version, you can, if you have a Kindle account or whatever, I don't know what it would have cost to bought the book straight up, but you can get it for 99¢. Yes, you can have the thing read it to you in a robot voice, whatever your thrill is. I'm not judging you. So you need to make sure that it's the one connected to the Audible version. But yeah, that looks like that was right there. It says Audible narration, the first one that was just shown there. I have another thing. I think I mentioned on After Things. I don't know if I mentioned on here, but I said if anybody wanted to get an advanced copy of my book Station Breaker, just email me beta. You know, just that in the subject line, beta.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of an idiot. I was thinking that I would get like a handful of people to do that, and I would just be able to be like, there you go. Type a little personal message. Thanks. Have a read. Blah, blah, blah. Because last time I did something like that, I buried it in like a PS. You're like, oh, if you want to read this new book, send me, respond to the PS. I had over 500 responses.
Nice!
Yeah. That's including my email list too.
That's okay? Great though.
So that was including my email list. So what I did is I just sent a thing to my email list like, hey guys, here's the advanced copy. Have a look at it. Here's a Google form to fill out afterwards with anything. So if you're not on my email list, you didn't get it sent to you because there were 500 people. So this is what I'm going to tell you. Go to my webpage, andyourmain.com, sign up for my email list, all right? And I will send this – wow, that's formatted wonderfully. I will send this out again, okay?
Well, you better get on it.
So I will send it out again to people who want to get want to read that in advance. I'll send you a free copy. It's a full-length novel. And but again, do it through my email list. It's not, again, get it unsubscribed. It's fine. If you don't want, I get it. I'm not trying to force you to do that. It was just like I didn't set up a proper, like, you know, at reply, whatever, you know, auto reply, because I'm an idiot.
Dude, right on. I got a pick, and I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's haunting. It's deeply unsettling. It's exquisitely performed and shot. I keep watching it, and I keep thinking, no, now it's just it's amazing. I'm 3 episodes into Mad Dogs on Amazon Prime, or I guess it comes with Amazon Prime, starring among other folks our friend Romany Malco. It's based on the British miniseries. It's extraordinary. It's written by Sean Ryan of The Shield fame, and I believe directed or executive produced by him. It's really great, and I can't put my finger on what keeps me coming back, because it's highly unpleasant. The experience of feeling like you're trapped and lost in Belize as this noose just tightens around you harder and harder, and that you watch your friends make increasingly dumb, bad decisions that only exacerbate the drama that you're in, it's unpleasant and delightfully so. It's great. So I highly recommend it. Mad Dogs. That's my pick.
That is right. I'm excited to watch it. I mean, we're obviously huge fans of Romany here, and a great cast too. A lot of favorites like Billy Zane, Steve Zahn. Hey, so last night, Ash and I went to High Life Pizza here in Oakland, which is a great pizza place that has a bunch of. Actually, Brian went the last time that he was here. It had a bunch of rad pinball machines and arcade cabinets and stuff like that. And I got a hankering when we came back, because Ashley had never seen it, to watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World. If you have not seen it, it is the only Edgar Wright movie that does not star or a feature length film that does not star Simon Pegg and Nick Frost in the leading roles. Came out in 2010, has got a lot of, you know, I think it's a movie that's aged fairly well because the cast has only kind of gotten more famous. But it's interesting in rewatching it. I think it's got some very interesting pacing issues because you kind of know what's going to happen. It has a very linear video game plot, you know, kind of by design, since that's you know, where it's continuing to, you know, find its voice. But, you know, it's very much Edgar Wright at his Edgar Wrightiest in terms of a lot of the visual gags and stuff like that. It does an effective job of sort of bringing a video game or comic book sensibility visually in a way that feels stylistic and super, super fun. But yeah, it's super enjoyable. I think, you know, really the one thing that having rewatched it is just like, wow, there isn't a ton of dramatic tension, nor are there a lot of, you know, different ways that the story goes that keeps you off kilter. You just kind of know what's going to happen, and it really puts the weight of the movie on it being visually fun and you being charmed by the actors and the dialogue. But I think it succeeds. It's super fun. And, you know, obviously I'm taking a real big risk here by recommending a geek-friendly movie on a podcast, but I enjoyed it.
Interesting to hear your evolution on this, Justin. Very interesting.
Wait, I think I said it had pacing issues when I first saw it.
I'd say it's very interesting to hear your thoughts on this. Anyhow,
well, thanks for the thoughtful analysis.
I when it first came out, I said, "Wow, it's got a lot of fun beats to it, and it's a visually fun movie." But the whole weight thing, and I think we've had Edgar Wright discussions before, right? I talked about Pilgrim being weak in certain respects because it didn't feel like, you know, having any kind of gravitas, I guess, to it.
Well, and I will say, compared to his other scripts, compared to his Cornetto scripts, it kind of pales in comparison because he very much likes to give, as a writer, you usually find something weird happening in the third act, something different happening in the third act, characters changing, characters revealing themselves to have ulterior motives. That's something that is regular within his other movies. This kind of does not have that at all. No one really changes all that much. Everybody is kind of who they are in every scene of the movie. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're kind of there for the video game fight scenes and seeing it as silly as it can get.
Have you seen the trailer for Yoga Hosers?
I have not, no.
That's the Kevin Smith thing, right?
Yeah, some people, the IO9 or somebody like that, said, hey, they're trying to capture the magic of Scott Pilgrim, which I don't know if that's true or not, but I will certainly say the trailer feels weird.
Feels weird, like in a bad way?
If you told me this was the second movie from the guy who did Clerks.
Oh, well, isn't this... This is more of his like weird stuff. He's doing a new trilogy of weird stuff. He had Tusk, and he had.
Yeah, I know. I meant like pacing and editing wise.
I see. Not very tight.
Yeah, you should. We can watch this or do it, save for after things or between or whatever. But let me say, hey, let's call it. Say it's Brian. Did you have anything else?
No. Just Mad Dogs, and of course, plug in the Discovery VR app and our episodes forthcoming. They're all really good. You can also, if you go to Discovery's YouTube page, just go to youtube.com and type in Discovery and you'll find their channel. I believe the one that's at the front of their page is the barefoot water skiing one. Of course, I'm sure they're looking at the number of views those things gets as well. So make sure to show your friends and pass that around.
Cool. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.